You're listening to Dragon Waves on the air with HKIS.
Welcome back, and you're listening to an episode of Dragon Waves, your HKIS podcast for all dragon-related information. I'm Anika, your host for today. I'm a high school junior, and I work as an intern for the HKIS marketing team. Today on Dragon Waves, we welcome the newest member of our high school admin, our new principal, Miss Amy Keller. Thank you for your time, Miss Keller.
Thank you for having me, Anika.
It's great to have you on a podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Happy Wednesday to you. It's the middle of the week and we are just rolling along with school. Things are getting very routine and normal for me around here.
I mean, the TA was probably a bit of like a move for that.
That was a very interesting welcome to Hong Kong, yes.
So I moved in like 2 years ago and I feel like a TA overall is just sort of like, it's sort of something that just happens to you. And like, it's another like step in your welcome to Hong Kong, your first TA to like, another thing that you get used to is everyone just sort of being really calm about it because it happens here pretty frequently. So when I first heard, like, all my classmates were like, oh, there's a T8, and I was like, what? There's like a typhoon and none of you are concerned.
Absolutely. It's kind of an initiation that I think probably every person new to Hong Kong goes through. Mm-hmm. But that was something that I really marveled at, just how quickly the city just kind of came back to life. There are certain parts of the world where that would happen and your city might be shut down for days on end. And, you know, but just seeing people kind of emerge from homes and buildings, get right to the cleanup, and life goes on. And I think that was it was really cool to see.
Yeah, I feel like that is really part of like the beauty of Hong Kong. And I mean, every sort of place has its own unique like charm to it. And for me in Hong Kong, I see a lot of this sort of resilience, especially after like T8s and stuff. People just seem to continue with what goes on. And
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it was a similar response during COVID as well. Like even then, people just went on once everything opened. And it's just, yeah, like you just keep moving. Okay, so on a similar tangent, we'll get into it. So you moved to Hong Kong from Korea after spending 7 years there.
Correct.
As a principal in the Korea International School. And before that, you lived in Canada. So what was your biggest culture shock moving from Canada to Korea? And what was your biggest shock moving from Korea to here?
I have to think back, but I think moving from Canada to Korea, the biggest shock probably was the pace of life. So not that life is super laid back or slow in Canada, but in Korea, it took on a new speed at the time. So 7 years ago, my children were very young and I was starting a new role in a new school. So maybe in retrospect, maybe it felt that way because there was a lot that I was learning. But I do feel like throughout my time there, there's a real go, go, go pace to life in Korea that I wasn't quite used to. I definitely came to appreciate it. It has its upsides and its downsides. An upside is like, you know, things are going to get done. And if you ask for something or if you're working on something, things will get done really, really quickly. And that was really cool, but it also took a little bit of getting used to. Thinking about moving to Hong Kong, one of the things that really strikes me in Hong Kong is the vibrancy. And that's not just compared to Korea, that's compared to a lot of other places that I visited and lived. Hong Kong is a very vibrant culture, very warm. You know, I'm walking down the street, whether it's, you know, in and out of my residential area or in shops, and everybody says hello and conversations are very easily struck up and people want to be really helpful. People are curious and they ask you about where you're from and it's really easy to connect with people. Life is fast here too and I do notice that, but I do notice that people also want to be really connected in Hong Kong and I think that's so cool and that's something that's been really helpful for me in feeling at home here really quickly.
Yeah, and I feel like part of this desire to explore and this sort of vibrancy that comes in Hong Kong, I noticed as well when I first came here, it's like, it's almost as if it's just something that's innate, like it comes from the land itself more than anything. Like there's just something about everything that's offered here from like this really bustling city life in places like TST and Central, versus like places like Shaco and Thai Town where it's way more relaxed and there's like a lot of nature. But all these places offer something and it just makes you want to look into it more. And honestly, that is something that I feel really adds to the charm of this place. Like this endless amount of beauty that seems to exist no matter where you look at it from, so.
Absolutely, and I love cities. So I find cities really beautiful, but I also, you know, like many people, I love nature too. And, you know, looking out at our landscapes here, whether it's on Tai Tam or on other parts of Hong Kong, there's so much diversity in landscapes, urban, rural, you know, city, nature, and it all just works here. And that's something that's really astounding and beautiful about the city.
Would you say that sort of factors also exist in places like Canada and Korea?
Yeah, I think there are those differences. I don't know that I've ever seen it in such a concentrated place before. So Canada is a huge country. And I feel like I probably know my little piece well, and I know some other pieces, but it's sort of like, okay, well, I'm in a different landscape now. I've traveled, you know, 4 or 5 hours by car to get here. In Hong Kong, it's like I go 2 subway stops, and then I'm in some place that's totally different. So there is that, but it's just concentrated here.
Yeah, like Hong Kong is a very dense city in general. Like, there's so much in such a little space. Mm-hmm. And when you go really far distances, it feels like very little, yet it feels like a lot. Mm-hmm. Especially here to the airport is one that I personally feel. It's like it's both a lot and a little at the same time.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite thing about each place? Like, your favorite cultural aspect?
Well, starting with Canada, I think that's the culture that I grew up in. I, considering all the traveling I've done in sort of this part of my life, I never set foot on an airplane until I was 21 years old. That was the first time I ever flew anywhere. And it was still within Canada. We drove a lot as a family, so I've been to the United States, but Canada is what's familiar to me. So when I think about Canada and my favorite things, I think about the people, I think about my family there, I think about my friends, I think about all the things that you have growing up that are familiar to you, like my house and the street I lived on and where I used to ride my bike and those kinds of things. So it's very nostalgic for me. With Korea, it was such a great experience in terms of bringing my kids there at a very young age. It was really safe, really well organized. Korea helped me see that I could live and thrive and be successful somewhere that wasn't my home and what I'm used to. I have lived in other places, but 7 years is a really long time. And, you know, people ask you, well, you know, you must have brought things back from Canada, you know, when you'd go on vacation, and what did you miss? And the longer I was there, it's not that I didn't miss those things, but I had new things in Korea. Like, I had new favorite foods and new favorite restaurants. So now that I'm in another place, I have things from Korea that I miss just as much as I might miss from Canada. So that's what did it for me.
So for you, homesickness wasn't really a thing, because it just sort of shifted.
Absolutely, yeah. I think about that a lot. And, you know, as an adult and coming here with my family, if I'm with my family, my immediate family, I'm okay. My parents and my siblings and my friends are in Canada and kind of all over the world. But I've got my stuff here, and I know now that even though Hong Kong is our new home, we're going to have our stuff here too. We're going to have our favorite dog walks and our favorite restaurants and those kinds of things, and you can really make it home. So that's something that Korea really taught me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and a little unrelated, but do you like hockey?
It's kind of a genetic thing when you're Canadian. I do like hockey. I played a little bit. So when I was in high school, girls' hockey was still kind of up and coming. It wasn't really accessible to a lot of girls, but my high school started a team in the 90s, I'll leave it at that. And my friends and I went out for it because we thought it'd be really cool. So my dad played hockey. You know, everybody's got somebody in their household almost that played hockey at that time anyways in Canada. So I had goalie equipment, so I was the goalie, not because I was particularly good at it, because that's what I had the equipment for. So I do enjoy it. And my husband's an avid watcher and player of hockey, and now my son plays hockey as well. I think it's just kind of part of our birthright.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of happens. I feel like there's some things in your culture that just become genetic at some point. And I feel like that just passes on. Like,
you kind of grow up with it, right? Like, maybe it's, you know, I remember so many family dinners and holidays, especially around Christmas time, which is winter in Canada, right? Mm-hmm. That there'll be a hockey game on in the background, or like it just kind of is part of the soundtrack of what's going on in your growing up years. So. It's just there.
Yeah, it's kind of like just it goes on, and then it just becomes part of like this background noise that's constantly going in your life.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's something very similar for me as well. So on a more professional tangent of growing up in different living in different places, mm-hmm. do you think the diversity in where you've worked has helped you develop professionally?
Oh, absolutely. So I think about that in two ways. When I went to teachers college and started my career and decided, yes, I'm going to go through and I'm going to be a teacher and I'm going to get certified, I think I was thinking kind of very in a very linear track. So first I'm going to be a teacher, and then maybe I'll be a department head, and then maybe one day I'll be an associate principal, and so on and so on. But I've been able to have really diverse experiences that have kind of taken me on and off of that path a little bit. So my first job, for example, was in South America at a school in a city called Barranquilla, Colombia. And I knew I wasn't going to live there forever, but it taught me so much. So it taught me about a whole new education system. So I worked in an American system and in the Colombian system, which was really interesting. So I may never work in a Colombian system again, but it taught me a certain adaptability and versatility. I had a job for 7 or 8 years, actually, as an educational researcher. So I still worked with a school board, and I still did some administrative work, but it wasn't kind of like what you would see here in a school, like you're in the principal's office. I worked with lots of different schools, and I worked on data collection, and I worked on assessment, and, you know, working with schools. They would set goals, and I would come in and help them to determine whether they had met their goals. We also did our own research on how our kids were doing compared to national averages and international averages. So I'm not doing that right now, but that gave me a lot of skills in the work that I am doing right now to be able to ask more informed questions, to be able to participate in conversations in different ways. And I've enjoyed it all. Like, they've all been great. Full disclosure, I think my favorite job is being a high school principal. I love what I do, but I really see myself leaning on different places that I've been, different people that I've worked with, and different types of jobs that I've had to kind of come to where I am now.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I feel like something that really shines when you go through a lot of places and learn a lot about cultures is your ability to, like, further empathize with people, mm-hmm. either from those cultures or from other cultures entirely, because I feel like it just gives you this broader understanding of the world. And once again, HKIS is a very diverse community. We Absolutely. Have people from all over the world who participate, whether as teachers or students or other faculty. And yeah, that's another part of the beauty, like this diverse unity that sort of shines through. So
Absolutely.
Yeah, I do agree that it really helps with building a stronger community with everyone involved. So on a similar note, what would be your approach to leading and building very strong communities, given this really strong background you have with working with different cultures?
One thing I have really learned through working in a lot of different diverse communities is that you need to meet people where they're at. So it's all well and good to come in with your ideas and your vision, but that's just yours. And until you become part of the community and really hear what the community wants, where they're at, what their fears are, what their concerns are, what their hopes are, then you create that shared vision together. And that's always more effective than coming in and trying to impose something. So I've learned that, you know, I might have certain views about, you know, about academics or about social emotional, but those are just my views. I have to come in and I have to get to know where our community is. I have to meet them where they're at. And we need to work together to figure out, okay, so where do we want to end up? And I can certainly help shape that. But I need to know where we're starting from, and only the community can help you understand that.
Mm-hmm. What do you see as the most important aspect about this?
Being willing to listen and being a really good communicator. And I think that works two ways. So the listening is certainly part of it, but also articulating the things that I'm thinking about, asking good questions, and really making that effort and making it clear to your community that you want to learn with them, that you're not coming in to impose something. You're coming in to work together, and that those goals, those values, that mission, that is something that is shared. It doesn't live with one person. When I come into a community, it's not me coming in. I'm kind of a caretaker for that, and that's a huge honor and that's a huge responsibility. But it's my job right now to be a part of the leadership of the high school, but it's not my high school, it's our high school, and I'm the steward right now to help take us to whatever the next step is.
Is it kind of like we are an airplane and you are the pilot? Would you say sort of like that? Or?
I guess so, because pilots don't own the airplane, right? Pilots, like, they come in and they have a certain role to fill, but that role works in conjunction with everybody else. And, you know, as a pilot, maybe you're part of the caretaking of that separate organism. So it's, you know, the community is separate, it has a life of its own, but we're all a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Was that a good analogy, or?
I think so. Yeah, no, I think it works. Mm-hmm. I love analogies like that, and then you just keep thinking of them throughout the day, and it's like, okay, so who's the passenger? Okay, so then there's a ground crew. But, you know, it really takes all of those roles to really get that plane in the air and get to that destination.
Okay, adding on to this question, who is everyone else on the plane?
Well, definitely parents and students. You know, you've got support people in your organization that help make sure that you've got what you need. So, you know, whether they're the mechanics, the crew, I really see that. Passengers is a tricky one because I don't know if there are any, I don't know if anybody's just strictly a passenger, because I think everybody, because passenger to me implies something passive, like you get on, you step on, you have no say in where the plane goes, you've just kind of bought the ticket and you arrive. But I think with our parents, our students, community members, faculty, staff, everybody's taking a role. So it's kind of like a cooperative airline, if you will, where it's like everybody has a job to do, they do the job, And then we all get on the plane together and we travel to wherever it is that we're going.
With HKS, it's sort of like the school in general just encourages that you never just sit and you never just do something. You're always kind of both. You both growing and you help others grow with you.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's expressed even just as a student in your own learning process. It's not just you sitting in a class and the teacher says stuff to you, you make notes, you just like throw it on a piece of paper and you get a grade out of it. No, because there's so much more of like an active learning to it. Like, it's not just you learning, you're also like kind of growing as well. And you don't just learn the material, you learn so much more about yourself, your community. I guess that's part of the beauty in like just education in general and how it's never just anyone being passive.
I think about the word investment in the sense that everybody here, and that's really struck me very clearly since being here, everybody here is really invested. So students are really invested, parents, teachers. We may not always agree, but at the end of the day, our purpose is the same. Our purpose is for the good of the community, our purpose is so that our students can be successful. And everybody's really invested in those. So if people are invested in that sort of common goal, common vision, common outcome, you may have difficult conversations, but they are made easier because it's like we're not arguing about the philosophy. We're arguing about how we get there. And maybe arguing isn't even the right word, but like, you know, when we're having those discussions. And that helps test each other because we know we're invested in getting to the same place. So we're going to have a better plan if we test each other out and we're asking each other really good questions that, you know, feed into everybody's individual perspective, but work towards sort of a collective common good.
So would you see like your kind of your priority for this year is just sort of working towards like a shared goal between the school and the parents?
I think building that relationship, and it takes time. I'm very aware that as a new person in this community, I need to be really respectful of that, be mindful that I am building relationships, doing a lot of listening. That's a huge priority. But also at the same time, you know, having conversations like I'm having with you and sharing what I think, sharing my goals, sharing my vision, sharing where I think we'd like to go, but being open to that conversation to help shape it. Because if I come in and just listen, that really doesn't help people get to know me either. But if I come in and I'm listening and I'm looking for ways that I can join the conversation and we can engage, and that's how, you know, that's how we'll get to our goals, whether that's change, whether that's enhancing things that we already have, we'll get there if we're sort of mutually transparent and clear and keeping up the communication. So communication is definitely a big one for me. Certainly we have school goals. We always have a focus in our academic area and we have a focus in our social emotional area. And I've got a great team that I get to work with that concentrate on those things, that, you know, we're having those same conversations. I'm understanding what has come up to this point. And now that I have this role as caretaker in this community, how can I get us to that next level?
To end this off, it's been amazing talking to Mescalo. We learned from experiences about having an adaptive mindset and constantly learning no matter where. For the plane that is HKIS, we look forward to scaling new heights and conquering uncharted territories with Mescalo. Thank you for listening to Dragon Race and see you soon. Dragon Race HKIS on the Air is produced by the Advancement Office and its podcast production crew. Special thanks to Amy Keller, our guest for today, Waylon Chong, class of 2020, for recording our intro, and Laura Lorenzen and Danielle Talon, our lower primary music teachers, for creating our theme song.